Florence Mall is nearly half empty, but where some might view the vacant space as a problem, Florence City officials see it as an opportunity. This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Joining me now to discuss the mall's status, what city officials have in mind, and how much influence local governments have over struggling malls are Florence City Administrator Josh Hunt. Welcome, Josh.
Hello, thank you for having me.
Thanks for being here. SiteWorks Real Estate Services founder and president, Nick Ejelanian. Thanks for being here, Nick.
Good morning or good afternoon.
And WCPO9 iTeam reporter, Dan Monk. Welcome back, Dan.
Hey, Lucy. Thanks for having me.
Josh, what's the status of Florence Mall right now? How much vacant space does it actually have?
So, you know, it's right around 45%. Certainly, you know, like many shopping centers throughout the country, it's seen its fair shares of ups and downs, and vacancies are included in that. If you go back about 10 years ago, I would say that the vacancy or the occupancy rate was about 65%. And within the last 4 years, it's dropped probably 10 to 15% in occupancy.
And Josh, that mall's been around a long time. Do you remember what year that was built?
Sure. So the mall started construction in 1976, and it started with Sears. Majority of the remaining property started construction around 79. It was finished in the early 80s. Everything had a roof up there, spans just under about 1 million square feet. It went through a couple major remodels. I think there was a big remodel in 94. Then in the early 2000s, they redid the food court. And, you know, there are four major anchors associated with the mall property that aren't a part of the mall itself. And those are Macy's Home Store, JCPenney, and then Sears. But Sears closed in 2018, so that's just an empty box right now.
Yeah. Dan, Josh kind of referenced this, but that 45% vacancy rate, that's a lot more vacant space than even just a few years ago, isn't it?
Yeah, as recently as March of 2020, Florence Mall had an occupancy rate of 87%, and that's back when it was owned by Brookfield Properties, and they later defaulted on their debt, which caused it to be acquired a few years later by Namdar Realty Group.
Hmm. And Nick, how common is it for malls across the country to have lots of vacant space? We have several in the region that seem to be struggling to fill retail spots.
It's extraordinarily common, and it's not unexpected. This has been a trend that started back in the early 1980s, and the genesis of it goes back to why these malls are failing, goes back to 1960, a very important Supreme Court case that was decided in 1960.
Tell us more about that.
Well, that case is called the Park Davis case, and it's funny, I studied it in law school, and I actually worked for the nominal plaintiff in it later and didn't even know how important it was. That case was decided under the Sherman Antitrust Act, and it and the Supreme Court outlawed what they called vertical price fixing. Most of your listeners and most Americans do not know this, but until that case in 1960, there was no discounting in the United States of a branded product. Manufacturers almost always set the price.
Hmm. And so you think that was the beginning of the end, the fact that there was discounting?
Yeah, well, what that did was it unleashed the forces. Within 1 year of that case being decided in 1960, you may find it interesting to know that the very first Walmart was opened, the very first Toys R Us was opened, and Kmart built its very first Kmart. All of those came from other businesses. Kmart was in the five and dime business. Walmart came out of the Ben Franklin convenience store business. And of course, Toys R Us was just a small local store in Washington, D.C. So it unleashed the ability for retailers to adopt a whole new model of retailing, which was to buy on a more efficient basis, create more efficient stores, and discount the price. And I would be very surprised if when the mall in Florence was built, if there was anything around it, and there's probably 2 to 3 million square feet of retail space that's been built around it, almost all of it on the convenience or discount model.
Hmm.
So that degraded the department stores. And these malls were built based on the model that came from the downtowns in the 1940s and 50s, which was that what drew people to the mall was the department store. So if the department stores then began to lose volume, which they did, as tracked by the Census Department almost on a steady basis from 1980 on, then the traffic in the mall was going to go down. And if the traffic went down, of course, sales would go down and eventually occupancy. And that's exactly what happened. It took 40 years, but in some cases took up to 60 years. But there were once 3,000 malls in the United States, and we're down to less than 600 now.
Wow. We're talking about the current status and potential future of Florence Mall and what the future could hold for other struggling malls in the region. Do you have questions or comments? Give us a call at 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Josh, as I referenced at the top of our conversation, I understand the city of Florence really sees this as an opportunity. What steps has the city taken to see what the future of the mall property might be?
Sure. So we've approached it in several ways. You know, first, when NAMDAR bought it in 2022, we set up meetings with them to discuss if they had any kind of desire to do reinvestment into the mall. And that's not really their MO. We've worked with site selectors all across the country to look at filling the big boxes, the anchors of the Sears store. We've had some mixed success with that. But when you get into doing redevelopment of the anchors of the mall itself, you run into REAs, so restrictive easement agreements that govern all these properties. And anytime you're working a deal, you have to get sign-offs on those. And I've been in economic development for over 20 years, and I can tell you that restrictions and needing sign-offs from multiple ownership groups can really slow things down, and they often derail these deals. And that's a huge challenge in, you know, any development project, especially for malls. The REAs for the Florence Mall are over 100 pages long, which really speaks, I think, to the complexity in navigating any new users or development or redevelopment potential. We've also been working with brokers. You know, there's commercial brokers assigned to all the anchor stores that they're actively for sale right now. And we've been focusing on an incentive package of what it would look like if there was either a full-scale development or a redevelopment of one of the anchors. You know, how do we offset the cost and move the needle on that?
Dan, you reported that, you know, the mall's four anchors are all for sale, and Josh talked a little bit about that. Tell us more about how that complicates the situation in terms of the future of Florence Mall.
Well, it complicates it because you don't know who the owners are going to be and what how willing they're going to be to deal with those restricted easements and, you know, allow a project, a redevelopment to go forward. The four anchors are two Macy's stores, a furniture store and a department store. They've been for sale since last summer. They're also thought to be on the possible list of closure by Macy's stores. They just announced a list of, I think it's roughly 60 stores that they're going to close in 2025. The two Florence stores were not on that list, but there's another 84 that they've yet to announce. And so it's possible those could close. Also, you've got the JCPenney store, which is for sale because it's part of a 120 store offering from a company that was formed to reimburse investors who lost money in the retailer's 2020 bankruptcy by selling off real estate. So, you know, that could go to somebody who buys 120 properties, and they would obviously have different interests than somebody who just bought the Sears building and wanted to redevelop it. And so all of these parties are going to have to, you know, get along in some fashion in order for all or part of the mall to be redeveloped.
And Josh, do I understand correctly that the city of Florence recently hired a consultant to kind of take a look at what the future could be for the mall?
Yes, we did. We have somebody that's looking at two things, the restrictive easement agreements. We've lost a lot of deals just not getting sign-offs and getting disclosures on what exactly the issues are with that. And then more importantly, they're looking at the incentive side of things. Naturally, this is going to be a very large number to try to get controlling interest of the anchors or the mall if it was a full redevelopment. And you got to start looking at the gap and how you close in on a gap with things like industrial revenue bonds, TIFs, GO bonds, and other incentives that we can offer.
Nick, how much influence do cities like Florence, other cities across the country have when it comes to the future of retail developments like these big shopping malls?
Generally, they have a lot more influence than they realize they have. And the influence that they can have, the most positive influence they can have, it's generally not through the way that they think they want to influence it. A lot of the mechanics of how to get through this process, which Josh described very accurately, are a little bit counterintuitive, particularly in the political world where you're trying to make the citizens comfortable on a day-to-day basis that you're being proactive. But in some cases, a better way to look at this is to have a longer view and then understand the process that's going on and how what the complexities of it are, and position yourself to be in control at the very end.
Well, we are going to...
Let me just mention, for example, NAMDAR. NAMDAR is perceived by most jurisdictions as its enemy because NAMDAR's business model is to come in and basically drive it out of business while bleeding the remaining yield out of it. They don't really have any interest in keeping it long-term. They're buying it at a low price, and they're going to create a fairly sizable return for their investors by simply bleeding the remaining yield out of it. But when they're done with it, typically they have no interest in redeveloping it, and they're going to leave it at a much lower value than when they bought it. And that the various rights that exist within it, including the reciprocal easements and the third-party ownership, the value of those are generally greatly reduced by the time NAMDAR's finished with its phase of ownership.
So that means it could be a lot cheaper for a municipality or some other entity to purchase the whole thing for redevelopment? Is that what you're saying, Nick?
That's correct. And I just might mention one other thing. Again, it's been mentioned, but the details of it matter. Yes, there are four or five owners involved there. There may be even more if some of the outparcels are owned. The smaller pieces around it might be owned by third parties. But really, a parcel of that nature, you know, in the United States, there are not very many. These average about 100 acres. There are not very many 100-acre sites in the United States that are in developed areas that have utilities and entitlements in place, and usually millions, if not tens or hundreds of millions of dollars of road improvements in place. So these sites are very valuable, and there's about 1,000 of them in play around the country right now. That's unprecedented. It's the biggest real estate play for real estate investors that'll happen in my lifetime. So the stakes, while the short-term stakes have their own view, the long-term stakes are incredibly important because these sites, a 100-acre site, could be anything from a stadium to several new shopping centers, a major mixed-use project, or other public or private uses. So depending on where it is, you just don't get opportunities to redevelop land of this significance. But the key is get it at the right value and control those as many of those parcels as you can.
We'll talk more about that after a short break. And later in the program, we'll hear about a new play that puts the focus on the women of Hamlet. This is Cincinnati Edition. This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're continuing our conversation about Florence Mall and what the future holds for that mall and other struggling shopping centers in our region. My guests are Florence City Administrator Josh Hunt, SiteWorks Real Estate Services founder and president Nick Ejelanian, and WCPO9 I-Team reporter Dan Monk. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Before the break, Nick, you were talking about how these malls, you know, these mall developments could be available for municipalities, for government entities at kind of bargain basement prices as some of these owners sort of drive the value down. Does it make sense financially for local governments to purchase distressed mall properties, Nick?
It can. We track almost all of the remaining malls in the country. And sadly, when most, and this is not a comment at all on Florence because I'm not involved in it, but around the country, most cities come in and buy too early and pay too much and underestimate the process. So yes, it can make a lot of sense, but timing matters and use of city powers matter. And two things can make it much more costly that the city can have some control over. One is giving out public money too early to the wrong players, like a NAMDAR, usually hurts the cities. And the leasing that goes on as you're leasing pieces of the dying mall, you're creating property rights. And as you create property rights, if, for example, if Dick's comes in and leases one of those anchors and they have a 20-year lease and two 10-year options, they got 40 years of control that you're going to have to then buy back from that. So it almost always makes sense to let these things get much worse before you help them get better. And there's a process that's really that we advise people to follow. And but most cities, you know, they have a difficulty with that. And it's not, you know, it's not because they don't want to do the right thing. It's because they don't necessarily understand the complexities of the real estate, and they're under political pressure. And, you know, administrations change and governments change, and governments don't always agree. Councils and mayors don't always agree. City managers can come and go. It's great that Josh has been in place for 20 years, but sometimes they come and go quicker than that. So it can be very hard for cities to navigate the world of this when the best way to go forward is often to wait.
Well, it's got to be really hard to watch such an important asset in your community kind of deteriorate over time. Josh, do city leaders have any initial thoughts about what they'd like to see happen with the mall property? I mean, it's far from the only business in Florence, but it's a lot of space there.
Sure, there's lots of thoughts. And to be honest, I don't see any kind of redevelopment that works unless it's a true mixed-use project. And it could be 10 years from now. You know, the numbers I would say are pretty high right now, and that's something that we're analyzing. We have no desire to own the property. There's a big misconception with a lot of people, a lot of residents around here that think that we, you know, own it or have some sort of controlling interest that we can dictate what happens there. But I think in order for it to be successful, you have to have a true mixed use with housing, hotels, and there has to be a heavy payroll component of it to maximize the incentives. And then ultimately entertainment, you know, door districts, things like that. We just want to create a true city center. And that's a long-term play that the city would like to see take place there.
So it sounds like residential is definitely something that you think would be part of the mix there.
I think when you look at taking down the numbers and what residential developers are paying per acre, it makes sense. And then it also plays into the foot traffic element of it. You know, to attract the big retail brands, the restaurants, you have to have those site selectors look for very specific things. So they're looking at, you know, median income, college education level. They look at that and then they look at density. And if you can create an area that has that, that's when you get the bigger brands.
Dan, the Journal News just reported this week that the latest proposal for the former Forest Fair Mall would include a business park. And I know you've reported a lot on many of these struggling malls in the region. What are some of the redevelopment opportunities some of these other malls are considering?
I know at Forest Fair, they are talking to a company about making their corporate headquarters there. So that's one idea that was raised in a meeting in Butler County that I covered and wrote about a few months ago. I think a lot of communities are hoping to convert their dying malls into these mixed use opportunities where you have a combination of residential, entertainment. In Springdale, they're trying to do the Tri-County Mall that way. Northgate bought part of the North, or rather Coleraine Township bought a portion of the Northgate Mall with the hopes of owning a piece of it so they could help, you know, shape its destiny. And they're looking at a possibility of a mixed-use development that includes residential, some retail, and entertainment sort of park space on that site. So I think most communities who are confronting this issue are looking for that mixed-use concept with varying degrees of success.
And Nick, it sounds like you're seeing that across the country when you talk about this as kind of an important real estate play that communities could make.
Yes, and that description is consistent with my experience. Most of the long-term uses that make the most sense are mixed use. And in Florence, that's probably true. But there are other cities where, like Scranton, Pennsylvania, which is a big nexus of highway systems, where that same site might be best used as a warehouse site for multiple warehouses or Amazon or whatever. But let me just say that in the case of the typical mall and in trying to create a mixed use project, whoever ends up with it, and normally it's going to be a third party developer, but assisting them in getting control over all the pieces of the puzzle is really important. Think of a mall like a four leaf clover, And if you only own one or two pieces of the clover, or you own the stem but not the leaves, it's going to be a pretty disjointed project. So each of those anchor boxes, each of those department stores, they're not just separate parcels, but they're parcels that are embedded within the overall property. So in order to really get a successful redevelopment, and residential developers have found this too, it's really important to try to control as much of it as you can.
Josh, how important is the mall property to the city of Florence? I mentioned that it's, you know, Florence has a lot of businesses around the mall and up and down various business corridors in the city. How important is the mall itself?
So the mall is a cornerstone of our community. Personally, I think my youth, I've got so many memories that are tied to it. And you ask anybody in Northern Kentucky, they've got a story about the mall. But I think what it means to the city has certainly changed over the past 40 or 50 years. When the mall was built in the late 70s, it was a game changer. It spurred hundreds of millions, if not billions, of new investment along Mall Road, and that eventually bled over into Houston Road with all the development, retail and commercial that landed there, and that created millions of square foot of retail and commercial space and thousands of jobs. But today, you know, it certainly has changed. We're viewing this as an opportunity. It's certainly probably not a short-term opportunity, and more of a long-term opportunity, but we think that the right development could catapult, you know, the future of Florence and Northern Kentucky for the next 50 to 100 years.
We got an email from Nicholas. Nicholas writes, "The mall needs serious help. It needs redevelopment badly. It's in a great location right off the interstate highway. One of my favorite malls where I grew up in White Plains, New York, closed after over 40 years in 2023. It was 41 years in business. What's the ultimate future of malls?" That question from Nicholas, I'm going to put that to you, Nick. What is the ultimate future of malls? I mean, there's so much online shopping now. Even Amazon is starting to open brick and mortar stores. Is there a chance we could go full circle and malls will be needed again?
No, malls are an obsolete format in the United States. We're a discount-oriented retail culture. We have five times as much retail as the average for the rest of the world, five times the amount. We have almost 25 feet per capita. The rest of the world exists on about 5 feet per capita. Malls are just no longer an efficient way to deliver goods and services. So of the 3,000 original malls, there's less than 700 left. And my company predicts that there will be less than 200 when it's all said and done. And they will only be the very high-end ones like Kenwood that have best-in-class merchandise. So the city is right to think of this as its future. It's right to have a 50-year perspective on it. And I think it's also right to think that it's the center of the community. And it's funny, I heard what I hear so often and what I feel myself. These malls were not just economic engines for the cities, and they were economic engines for sure, but they were cultural centers in their own way. They were meeting places. So it's complicated to educate a city and educate constituents on how to undo something that was, in fact, that 100-page REI. These things were never meant to be taken apart. So it's very complicated to do it, and it's hard to get everybody on the same page.
Josh, what are the next steps for the city of Florence when it comes to the future of Florence Mall? We talked about how you've hired this consultant. What's next in all this?
So in a lot of ways, it's a waiting game. We'll get our numbers. We're constantly, you know, I handle economic development in my office. We deal with site selectors every day. There's a lot of interest in the anchors. You know, we have to protect the asset, and we have to look at what the long-term vision is that we have and what we think is best for the mall property and the community, and, you know, continue to work, chase down every lead, and hopefully somebody will come in and we can offer the right incentives and then get controlling interest of it, and we can do a redevelopment that's going to redefine Northern Kentucky.
Dan, what are you going to be watching for as a reporter when it comes to Florence Mall and some of these other struggling malls in the region?
One of the things that was remarkable just in the last several years is how quickly all of this changed. When we rated malls on the most endangered malls in Cincinnati in 2020, Florence Mall was the second best, and it's now, you know, gone down considerably. So I think that the most interesting thing about malls to me is that they're places that have an emotional connection. That's pretty rare in real estate, where you have a lot of people who are just emotionally connected to your space. And I think what communities are going to have to do is keep that emotional connection in some way, whether it's a playground or a concert facility or some kind of cultural gathering center that can keep that that emotional attachment to the space while redeveloping everything else around it.
Well, I've been talking with Florence City Administrator Josh Hunt, SiteWorks Real Estate Services founder and president Nick Egelanian, and WCPO9 iTeam reporter Dan Monk. Thank you all so much for your time today. Up next, we'll hear about a new play that's focused on the women of Hamlet. This is Cincinnati Edition.